if you want something that's good and hot, just eat a hamburger, it'll hit the spot. You can see him on the grill going flippity-flop. Makes you want to do the
Welcome to the BurgerPalaceAudio.com podcast for industry professionals. I'm Andrew Heil. From copywriting to producing, directing to acting, in television, multimedia, or movies, the BPA podcast is your source for learning about the many different behind-the-scenes roles that comprise the entertainment industry. This is part two of our Stephen Bernstein interview. Stephen is a five-time Emmy Award-winning composer who's worked in TV, film, and live orchestration. So as a composer and musician, you have a style that's very unique. It's your own. What was the impact of working with your mentors on your current style today? Is it impacted?
Well, I would say not in terms of actual sound. I think I still probably retain my individual sound just because I have a preference for the kind of sounds I like and kind of the way I want to express certain things. I have particular whatever techniques I employ are kind of my own. But in terms of the process, definitely they affected me. I know Fred was extremely precise. He was an amazing music scholar. And what he wrote, he really meant to write. Every note was on purpose. And it was very clear when I was orchestrating for him, his sketches were so complete that it was an absolute breeze to orchestrate them because there was nothing left for me to do but to write it down.
So that sounds like a style that works well with you, considering you originally were thinking of engineering and it has an engineering style to it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's kind of it's this sort of crossword puzzle kind of mentality. It is a puzzle, and it involves both the horizontal with the melody and the vertical with the harmony, and there's also the timing involved, especially on animation, the timing, what's the word I'm looking for? The timing constraints are really severe. You really have to know what you're doing in that sense and still try to make it musical. So, the precision and scholarly approach really, I think, influenced the way I work now.
So we go back to USC.
Yes.
The guinea pig team. Are you in touch with any of the other 11 folks?
You know, it's funny. Yeah, rarely, actually. And it's funny because we were so close. You're under so much pressure and you're all going through this extreme duress trying to learn this. We had a recording to do every week. Every week we were given a different job in that recording. We'd be at the producer one week. We'd be the copyist another. We'd be the music contractor responsible for hiring players the next. So and not only that, we were also taking other courses in this program. So we were tightly knit at the time. And I'm Facebook friends with a few. A couple others I lost touch with, and you know, it's always great to hear from them. I mean,
are they still within the industry?
I think most of us, yeah, are still in some way or another musically occupied.
Nice.
Yeah.
How in the world would a producer be involved in the musical choices being made along a recording session? Not a recording session, but along the process.
I think it depends on the project. I mean, certainly for Animaniacs, Tom Ruger was very involved in what we did. And definitely to the benefit of the series. I mean, he really guided it to his vision, much as a director would on a live-action film.
And Steven Spielberg on Animaniacs was executive producer, so he was sort of hands-off.
Yeah, well, at the very beginning, he was very involved, I think, in character design and story, in the storylines and that sort of thing, and the tone of the show. And then he wisely delegated the responsibilities to everybody who had their specialties.
Do you work with particular musicians on a regular basis? Do you hire your own orchestras?
I usually use a music contractor who knows how to fill in all the forms. But I can request musicians that I like to work with or whose sound I like. And
I play spoons, by the way.
Excellent. I'll put you on the list. So, I love to work with people with whom I've worked before. And with, you know, in those 10 years I worked at Warner Brothers, 10 years straight, it was a party every other week for me. I would go in and just, you know, we were so glad to see each other. They had a blast. Musicians loved recording this stuff. And it was great fun.
Do they have to sight read or do they get this beforehand?
They have to sight read. Yeah. And I've been told this is some of the most difficult music they've had to record. It's extremely fast. There are a lot of notes. and it changes very drastically.
Is that animation in general or the stuff you write?
Well, I mean, it depends on the show. The stuff, especially Warner Brothers style, yeah, it's very difficult. I mean, there are other shows with very languid scores that work for the show, and those probably aren't as difficult. They're scored more dramatically. I mean, certainly all the Batman series, they were scored by the brilliant team, what they called Dynamic Music Partners. I think that's their name. Dynamic Music. They're terrific, and they do the dramatic stuff, and they're very experienced and very good at it. And I suspect that the musicians don't have quite the at least not the tempo challenges that they deal with the more jumpy loony stuff.
Did that surprise you that you started doing kind of the lighter, jumpy stuff when you say that you compose in a more dark fashion?
Well, I don't know if surprise. The best jobs I've had have come sort of from the side. The stuff I really, really wanted, I head straight toward and didn't always get. But the best jobs really kind of came from out of nowhere. And so I may have been suited to this. Unknowingly. I mean, I wanted to be Jerry Goldsmith and John Williams, and I still kind of do. Last couple shorts that I've scored have been dramatic scores, and it's great fun, and I don't have to write as many notes.
So what kind of marketing do you do for yourself when it comes to that? I mean, yeah, it's all part of the business, right? I mean, no matter how you do it.
It's a huge, huge good question for me. I hate it.
Well, and a lot of people do.
Yeah, right? I neglected it when I was working so much because I thought I would be that way all the time. I was still some of my characteristic naivete, I think. And then I was kind of, when things ended at Warner Brothers, like, oh, now what? But it's interesting. Lately, I have found that the social network has been huge in kind of helping me get in front of people again and saying, hey, this is what I've done. This is what I do. And you ought to check me out. And,
well, I can't wait for them to hear this podcast, to be honest.
Oh, well, thanks.
Make sure that I market that as well as I can.
Yeah, this certainly doesn't hurt, and thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, I'll get it out to Rob Paulson. He'll certainly spread the word. Yeah. So my wife wanted me to ask you a specific question. Instrument. What is your instrument of preference?
Well, I played the piano since I was five. Well, I had lessons since I was five, all the way through high school. Actually, in college, I also studied. So I'm a keyboardist. My daughter is a violinist now, and when she first started, my wife and I thought it'd be fun to also learn violin. And
it ain't easy.
It's not easy, but my daughter's really good, and I can make some sounds, but you know, it's really painful.
Yeah, of all the things that I didn't do growing up, I played piano, but I hated the practice. I tried guitar. I played cello for a little bit. It's the one thing that I bet people say, I wish I'd have stuck to it.
I hear that a lot. Yeah, absolutely. And I kind of feel that way, too. I had the opportunity in grade school to learn French horn. I think in junior high, I was asked to learn the double bass. And this is all because I knew music. I had a reputation as somebody who could play the piano and knew music. And those are both tough instruments. So, but I don't know. I was kind of creeped out by the teachers, I think, and didn't want to play.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
I won't comment on music teachers. I love mine.
The strangest things get involved in the decisions when you're young that maybe wouldn't as you get older.
Are there classical composers that have influenced you?
Oh, sure. Yeah. My favorite composers are probably my best influences, and I think that kind of makes sense. I mean, certainly Bach. Because of his precision and kind of crossword puzzle-like involvement in his music, but also because of the passion he was able to achieve within those structures. I mean, the best as far as I'm concerned.
He does feel mathematical, though, when you think about it.
Yeah, and a lot of people call it motoric, but I think if you really start to listen to some of the passions and some of his sacred music, it's just mind-blowingly emotional, and the way he was able to achieve that along with the style that he was writing in is pretty amazing. But then, you know, you can go through every period of music, and I have my favorites, but I tend toward the early 20th century, and Prokofiev, Bartok, Copland, Bernstein.
Yeah, Copland's my favorite American composer.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Yeah, but I bet most people haven't heard his very serious.
No, they hear Appalachian. Yeah, I mean, Spring,
those are wonderful. I mean, that they're. I can't say enough about how much I love those pieces. But then you get into something like his. I played his piano variations, which is very severe and systematic, and much different. You would never guess it's Copland.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
So you compose also for orchestras,
yes.
in chamber music,
right?
What other kinds of live orchestrations have you composed?
Well, I love writing for the voice. I've written for solo voice. I have a set that was brilliantly performed a few years ago for soprano and piano. I have a couple major oratorios for chorus and chamber orchestra. Right now, I'm working on a violin duet. Duet for two violins for some very good friends of ours.
And your daughter, I hope.
That would be great. I don't know if it's. I don't know if what I'm writing is if she's quite up to it. She might be. Not playing, I'm not sure.
how hard it
is. I know how the instrument is played. I just can't do it.
Do you find that you compose things that are difficult that you couldn't play yourself?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I can't be expected, I hope, to be able to play the bassoon and the flute and the viola and the xylophone. I mean, it just it's not reasonable. But that said, I need to know how they're played. I need to know what they sound like when they're played that way. I need to know the capabilities. And sometimes it's up to individual players. If I know a player who's just incredible and can do something that maybe not everybody can do, I'll write for it if I know it's going to be played. And for an example, a brilliant percussionist, Mike Englander, who is bicoastal now. He was living on the West Coast, and he's moved to New York and comes out to L.A. for sessions.
Oh, fun.
But he was our Animaniacs percussionist, but he was the xylophone player.
And right, isn't xylophone one of those things that you think of for animation?
Absolutely, absolutely. And it was an extremely important sound for us. But what we would do sometimes is give him the violin part to play along with. And he could do it. And I don't think a lot of other people can.
That's cool.
Yeah.
If somebody had a magic wand that they could loan you.
Yes.
What would that magic wand do for you?
It would probably provide me with my own personal orchestra. That would be catered so that everybody would eat well. that's a really good question. I would love to score a big film. I know that I can do that thing. It's just that I need to convince the people that hire that I can do that thing. And, you know, most of the time they go with people who have that track record because it's a big risk. It's a lot of money involved.
Do the folks that you've worked with, do they hold the clout to help you get to that point?
I hope so, yeah. I think that it's interesting, too. I call it the great Warner Brothers diaspora because there was a huge team involved in these shows for about 10 years, and then personnel changed over there, and people are now in many other places. And I still have these connections with these folks, and so I will say hello, how are things, and you got any work for me? You
know? Is that part of the industry at risk of being outsourced?
I think everything is at risk being outsourced, and especially with technology. I mean, certainly with ISDN lines, and I haven't had to leave my studio for recording and delivery of anything. I no longer deliver on CD. You know, everything is over the net now. So yeah, you could live anywhere. So anybody can do this if you have the training, and sometimes if you don't have the training.
There's a lot of digital and electronic music, but live orchestration, they're together. Not going to have your rhythm section on ISDN in New York and your strings in Chicago on ISDN. They'll be together, I would hope.
You're right. That wouldn't happen usually. However, I know that there are services overseas, I think in Eastern Europe especially, that have video and sound lines, and you can conduct from L.A., and you can conduct a session that goes on over there. Or you can have your brass recorded here and your strings in London. I mean, it's an international, worldwide phenomenon now. But I think, in general, you get better results with an orchestra all in one place. And I haven't had a better experience than LA musicians. They are the best in the world at this stuff.
You're all wild, I can tell you that. I don't want to know what skeletons you all have in your closet.
Oh, that's right.
But I'm sure
don't.
You have a few. Now, your wife is also, first off, I didn't even ask you. Five-time Emmy Award winner.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to the very first one. Yes. What happened? How did you find out, and what was it for?
This was in, I think, maybe this might have been the first season of Animaniacs, and a very ambitious score. They did a lot of musical theater parodies, and there was an episode called Les Miseranimals with Bernadette Peters starring as the cat Rita, and Frank Welker, a brilliant voice actor, who did Runt the dog, who was kind of patterned after Rain Man, Dustin Hoffman's Rain Man. And they did this episode patterned after Les Miseranimals, and Richard Stone wrote the songs. There's an interesting story behind that, too. And I wrote the underscore, which meant I did the orchestral arrangements for the songs, as well as all the other music in the rest of the episode. And so, you know, and this was one of the shows that we did. And then Emmy nomination season came around, I think we sent out DVDs and stuff and said, please vote. And we got nominated. Great. This was amazing for me.
Right.
This is my first real, it was not my first series, but it's my first really, really well-known series.
You can even say Emmy nominated, and that's a great moniker.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. And so we went to the dinner, and lo and behold, they called our names, and I was beside myself. It was unbelievably exciting.
Let's skip forward to five. as exciting?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no feeling like it. And we were nominated for Baby Looney Tunes. And it was an anniversary year for Sesame Street, and they were winning everything, and they won the music, and deservedly so. They have a great music situation program over there, and it's wonderful, and it's very disappointing when you don't win, but it's still a thrill. You get the information the morning of the nominations, and you go, oh my God, this is really cool. So yeah, no, it's exciting both to be nominated, and you're in good company. You're getting recognized for what you do. And then when you win, you get this statue, and that's really fun.
That's proof in the pudding. Your wife has four.
That's right.
Is there a competition going on at all?
Well, in a kidding kind of way. But this is an interesting kind of thing. When I said I'd get back to that story about Les Miseranimals, Julie, my wife, had originally written the songs for Les Miseranimals, and they were really good, and they were very much like the Les Miserables songs, but not as much like them that there would be litigation.
Right.
And this was, like I said, it's the first season of Animaniacs, and the producer was very concerned about keeping things under control and didn't know Julia that much. She really wasn't involved in the show very much at that point. So he, at the kind of toward the last minute, he asked Richard, I want you to write these songs, which he did very quickly. They were great. But I think Julie's were equally as great. And that's the episode that won our first Emmy. Julie certainly could have been involved in that win as well. But she's gone on. She wrote hundreds of songs for all those series, for Animaniacs, Pink in the Brain, Freakazoid, Hysteria, a ton of songs. And she's written scores, and she's done orchestration. She's got one of the best ears in the business.
What advice would you have for anyone at any stage of their career if they're interested in doing the kind of work that you do?
Great question, and I've been asked that a few times, and it's hard to answer because I think everybody's path is going to be different. I did not expect to do what I've done, and I have no expectations of what I'm going to be doing. I mean, everything is kind of project to project and minute by minute. That said, I think that what has helped me is being prepared. I had a really, really good education in music. I understand the language. It's like if you were to ask somebody to write a book and they weren't really fluent in English, it makes the task a lot more difficult, mm-hmm. and they need a lot more help. So I found that preparation for me has been invaluable. Also, you need to know folks who know you, people who are already established. And actually, the best thing is to know people who are in charge of hiring the positions that you want to be in. It's not as beneficial, although it's really great. I mean, it's a wonderful club. The the composers in town, at least for film composers, but also just composers in general. We have a bond because we have this same illness. So, know people, get friendly with people. But I can't be pushy. I have to be natural. I know some folks, especially some young folks, who have made an enormous number of contacts, but I just don't like being around them. And if I have the opportunity to hire them or somebody else who I know equally well and is equally capable, I'm probably going to want to hire the person that is that I can stand to be around.
So be aggressive, but stay grounded.
Be natural and grounded, and understand your position. That's all right.
I just heard someone referring to the youth is wasted on the young kind of attitude, and it is. I
always hated that when I was young,
right? But now,
it's totally true.
I'll tell you an off-color joke when we turn the mics off.
There's nothing like experience and you can't get the experience without working, and you usually can't work without experience. So if you can break that circle, you're ahead of the game.
Amen to that. For more information about Stephen, log on to resonancemusic.com.
Can you spell that?
I will spell
that. Okay, because it's really a weird word.
So go to dictionary.com, spell resonance. No. For more information on Stephen, log on to resonancemusic.com. It's R-E-S-I-N-O-U-S music.com. You can just click the link. We will actually have a link directly to his website on bpapresents.com, which is how you're hearing our podcast now. If you liked what you heard today, please email us any comments, questions. If you want to get a hold of Stephen, which I can't imagine you wouldn't want to after this, you can send me a note. I'll forward it. Or again, just log on to resonancemusic.com and maybe he'll become your mentor. Who knows? And hopefully if you're considering a project of your own and you need someone that does what he does, he's a great reference. This podcast is copyright 2012 of BPA Presents and Burger Palace Audio. All rights are reserved. Thanks so much for listening.
For Burger Palace Audio Presents, this is Andrew Heil.